Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello there and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe Rimmer, joined today by Ian Doyle. How are you, Ian?
I'm okay, just trying to get into a nice seat.
Get yourself comfy.
Yeah, it's not really working for me, this.
Yeah. And Paul Gorst, how are you?
All good, yeah. Very tired.
Yeah? Why are you so tired?
It's all catching up with me now. I feel like Van Dijk have put in 50 appearances or whatever this season, and it's just catching up. Can't wait to get to an international break now.
Yeah, but what, will you get called up?
That's the... No, I don't think so.
We agreed a deal to keep you fresh.
So you've got to manage the hamstrings at this level of the season.
Look, no audio only today, no video.
You're just having a drink then?
Yeah, just a little sip. Audio only today. Our producer Ian is off today, and
the nerve of him,
after a big game. So we got no video resource. So apologies if you're a YouTube watcher, or you probably won't even hear this, will you? If you're a Facebook watcher, but we'll be back on Friday with a video version, but audio we'll have to do, and there's plenty to discuss. Bumped into Doyle as we walked in today, Gorsty, and I said to him, like, weird feeling after that game, because you should feel as though 2 points dropped after Liverpool sort of banged on Man City's door throughout the second half and didn't quite find a way of knocking it down. But I feel like everyone came out of the game quite energised, quite confident. I read you obviously pulled together the national media, and I thought, obviously I read your stuff and loved it, but I read Miguel Delaney's in The Independent, and he said, like, we've kind of been waiting all season to find out whether Liverpool how good Liverpool are, and now we have a definitive answer. And I thought that's how everyone felt after the game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. But I'd also suggest that maybe two defeats all season. I mean, what happened with the first one? The farce just of Tottenham.
Talking of farce, I've just thrown my tea
we're not on video.
Good job, it's not a can of Carabao.
That would be bad.
Disaster. But go on, sorry.
You know, two defeats all season. Away at Tottenham, we know what happened there. And then Arsenal, away at Arsenal, one of the most difficult places to go this season. So I can see this idea that we're waiting to find out if Liverpool are the real deal. But I think they've sort of proven that anyway over the last few months.
Yeah.
They're just maybe not your kind of typical real deal in terms of they've spent money on this player, they've spent money on that player. You know, basically patched up, aren't they? Gerald Kwanzaa, for example, yeah. Conor Bradley at right back. Endo was not necessarily first choice in the area, starting in the midfield. So I think all that maybe paints a bit of a perception that Liverpool are somehow just winging it to an extent. But I think this is a top side. And originally I thought, you know, coming away from the game, you can point to the fact that Liverpool maybe haven't beaten a top six side at home again, and that could cost them. You can also point to the fact that Arsenal were probably jumping for joy that there was no winner for that one, and they're still top. But ultimately, you've got to look at who Liverpool didn't have on the pitch. You know, Robertson as a cameo, Salah as a cameo, and no Trent, no Alisson, no Matip, no Konate, no Jones, Jota, even Gravenberch to an extent. He hasn't exactly had a brilliant season, but he's an important part of the squad, isn't he? And Thiago, Bajetic, and even maybe Ben Doak, who certainly would have played more in the last sort of 2 or 3 months. So for them to go into the game without, you know, I'd probably argue 6 or 7 first 11 players.
Just to add in, you know, you say Ben Doak there, but Ben Doak has a knock-on effect, because like you say, if he plays more in the Europa League, other players get more rest, maybe they don't pick up more injuries. So, that, you know, that that big long list of injuries they've got has an impact in all different areas,
yeah,
doesn't it?
But Bacetic, you know, Jones might not have had his injury, yeah, if you know, he's able to play a bit more and whatever else. Certainly Thiago, yeah, who still for me is Liverpool's best midfielder when they're all lined up and they're all fit. But it seems a long time since I've had any evidence to point to for that opinion. So yeah, all things considered, a massive performance and a decent result. But then you can also, the fact that you're able to lament Liverpool not winning it probably shows you how far they've come and how impressive it was. Because City sometimes draw, sometimes lose, but they never dominated the way they were in that game.
That's a great point. And they did dominate most of the first half, Doyle. And I thought the spirit Liverpool showed to get back on top of that game and dominate to even a greater extent the second half, the way they did, I think it was just phenomenal. And we often talk in the podcast about player performances, and we'll go through them in a bit, but how much credit does the manager deserve for creating a club that can play with such passion, with all the resources that Gorsley's just mentioned, out injured, coming off at half time, clearly second best, but to get back into it and play the way that they did?
Well, it comes down to a couple of things, doesn't it? I mean, you mentioned then that some people have said that Liverpool have been winging it. Well, that's the whole point. They have been. The entire season they've been winging it. And I think the only reason they can be this successful, because basically, don't forget that they didn't expect Henderson to go or Fabinho to go. So even in the summer, they're already like having to change plans, you know, in terms of players that they've signed. You mentioned Endo as well. He wasn't the first choice. I couldn't say they didn't want him, but they did eventually. But he wasn't the one that they went for initially. So everything's just been, they've been winging it. Even during the game on yesterday, they were winging it. And I think, I mentioned in one of my pieces that this season, Liverpool have learnt more than anything in terms of just learning on the job throughout games. That's why often we've said this so many times that they've not been particularly great in the first half. And once again, that was exactly the case in the first 20 minutes. And most of the time it's because they're playing with a completely different team. Yeah. There's been absolutely zero consistency. So it takes them a little while to get used to it. And you look at, you mentioned then about the manager. Yeah, it is. That can only come from having been manager for a very long time and the players knowing exactly what to do. And that's, could they really do it all in one season when the new manager comes in? Possibly, but probably not to the extent that they've done it now. I mean, we talk about the players that are coming, but Bradley's been there for a long time. Quants has been through the academy. Harvey Elliott's been there for a long time now. You know, these are players that have been here quite some time. Nunes has been there for more than 18 months. Gakpo's been there for more than a year. So if all of those players know what they're meant to be doing, and Keller as well, of course, we can't forget him, that when you've then got Endo comes in, Szoboszlai, McAllister, they can all just fit in. So that it's not a massive overhaul in that sense, but in terms of, you look at the changes that Klopp, Liverpool had four of their back five missing, first choice back five missing. Mm. I mean, one of them was on the bench, Andy Robertson, and that was a decision that, in the end, turned out to be just about okay. I mean, Gomez had a massive struggle against Foden in the first half, left back, but when he went to right back, he had a good game. Conor Bradley was good at right back. Robertson was very good when he came on at left back. You know, and we mentioned then you're going to talk about individuals, but Quanta and Van Dijk were both very good. Just Liverpool overall. I mean, if you look at the game beforehand, we all said 2-1 to Liverpool, which it could have been with that penalty if they should have had at the end, which I'm sure we'll mention that one as well in a bit. But after 20 minutes, you're like, this could get really messy, because City were very much on top and Liverpool didn't look like they know what they were doing. At half time, you're taking a point. So I think overall, you can't complain too much with the way things have gone. But yeah, in terms of, as Ghosty said, winging it, that shouldn't be a criticism of Liverpool. That's actually a massive strength, and is the reason why they are where they are now.
The fact that they're able to wing it and to adapt, I just think it's great.
I mean, they had 11 players missing yesterday, and City had one.
But that's
City had one, and then it was two. Then it was two. Obviously, when Edison goes off,
Which is in the second half, isn't it? I mean, I sitting next to an Everton supporter in the office there, and he's Liverpool win this game. No doubt about it. I said, why? He said, you always beat Man City at Anfield. And I thought, well, you know, with the exception of COVID season, then yeah, that's true. But I said to him, never have we played Man City and seen Liverpool with a team shorn of so many stars. I mean, like, it's incredible to think, like you say, four of the back five. You know, the first choice goalkeeper who's so, you know, he's not just the first choice goalkeeper, he's one of the best goalkeepers on the planet and important to them. Trent Alexander-Arnold is the club's vice captain, so important to the way they play, and was so important to the way that they sort of would transform towards the end of last season, the start of this. You know, Konate was massive.
Massive experience since December. Yeah.
And he was one of the best players. Yeah. That's bad performance in time.
And I thought Konate, when Konate wasn't fit for this one, I was really worried, because I thought that we see him win so many individual battles against quick players, and I thought if Man City break, he's often there for him. And then of course Robertson coming off the bench. We don't need to tell you how good Robertson is. So if you just take that into account, that's incredible. I don't think Arsenal could have done that. I don't think there's another team on the planet that could have dealt with Man City the way Liverpool dealt with Man City yesterday, with the players that they had out. So I think when you analyse their performance, you have to analyse it in context of that. And it was really, really, really good. Yeah. Saying all that, of course, there was still a part of me that I look through the league this season and think, when it all is said and done, Liverpool will have played Arsenal twice, missed a huge opportunity to beat them at home, penalty decision, Trent hits the bar, lose away. Man City get a good result away from home, but again, feels like maybe they've missed a big opportunity to beat them at home. And they've not beaten the two teams that they are fighting for the title. And my big worry is, when you go for a title, usually you have to win some of those games.
So it's lost 3 points from 12, was that?
Yeah.
It's a big issue for them, isn't it? Beating top six teams.
You look at Arsenal, they've beaten Liverpool and Man City both at home.
The only team they've beaten in the top six at home this season was Aston Villa. Before Villa were anywhere near as kind of polished as they are now. It was back in September. Yeah, it's a big... big question mark over Liverpool, isn't it? Got to play Tottenham at home before the end of the season. Got to go to Manchester United. Everton are going to be right up for that one, aren't they? But I thought the game was pretty much similar to what Liverpool have been doing all season, where first half they weren't at the best, and then second half they were brilliant. I think they'd be streets ahead of everyone if, you know,
They
just played the second half. it's a weird thing that it has become a trend at Liverpool.
Football matches are too long anyway. I think 45 minutes is the perfect amount of time.
Start the clock at 45 and then see what happens. But it's just one of those
really
trends.
Do you really think
that?
No.
But that was probably the best second half of the season, wasn't it? And it's just so strange to see City being dominated the way they were, because, okay, City might lose the odd game, they might draw a few, but it's only ever them being shut out.
They seem to miss a sack full of chances, don't they, and get frustrated.
Yeah, but they didn't miss chances. Seem being better on them for large
Liverpool
parts.
Liverpool had more possession than City and had more passes, and that's the first time anyone's done that to City since Arsenal played them in February last year. Yeah. And City won 3-1 because they deliberately played a way that meant that they'd just let Arsenal have the ball and they'd play them on the break. Yeah. But I don't think City were doing that yesterday. Well, I thought it was interesting after the game when Pep Guardiola, he spoke and he said, "Diller," he was talking about the game, and he says, "Look, they've got Endo McAllister now," and basically said they could pass their way through midfield. They can still play direct, but they were a lot less direct than they usually are, and they had the pair of them, and they were always looking out for each other. So I just thought that was quite interesting, because that's a kind of slight change in the dynamic when Liverpool have played. Remember, when they played City, they put all four up front, and they just said to Henderson, "Wijnaldum, you just look after that." It was completely different way. It was a completely different way of playing. And for Guardiola to notice it and then try and change, because he took off De Bruyne.
Yeah.
I mean, he did bring on Kovacic, who I spoke to, and I sat next to Andy Dunn of the Mirror. In the press box, and I just turned to him and said, "I've never seen him have a bad game against Liverpool. I've only seen him play bad games against just about everybody else.
I don't think I've seen him play for City, though.
But he always plays a good game against Liverpool, and he's another player that Guardiola, after the game, said the game kind of swung, not swung back in City's direction, but totally.
They calmed it down a little bit
towards the last 10 minutes, well, before that frantic injury time period, because he was on doing good passes. So it was just Liverpool made City change the way they were playing during the course of the game, as opposed to normally where Pep might do something crazy beforehand and then stick with it.
I saw Andrew Beasley tweet as well. I think it was the most shots I can't remember, there was a bit more to it than this, but pretty much the most shots or most chances they've created against the Pep Guardiola Man City team. So that sort of spelled out the domination, because we've seen Liverpool score four times against a Pep Guardiola Man City team. So we know, you know, that there's been good performances before, but I suppose that that underlines just how good it was, especially, I mean, most of that was the second half, and I think they finished the game with sort of 10 more shots, and I think the XG was far higher than Man City's as well. So, you know, I think all round, I think it spelled domination for Liverpool by the time that it was all said and done. One thing I want to talk about before we move on to VAR is just that, do you know what I felt like yesterday? That after years of battling with Man City, on the pitch, off the pitch, some unsavoury moments from both sets of fans, I think it's fair to say, I felt like it was like two sort of veteran fighters who, after everything was said and done, sort of hugged it out and said, you know what, we've been good for each other. And I don't know, I just felt like there was something positive about the two clubs' relationship that came out yesterday, which was, God, haven't we? Hasn't this been great?
Yeah, I mean, there was no talk of any police reports or incidents or anything like that, which is obviously to be welcomed, because, you know, we were at Anfield, what was it, 18 months or so ago for that October 1-0 win, and it was marked by all kinds, wasn't it? You know, City fans writing all kinds of graffiti in the away end, and City alleging that the bus was attacked on the way home, and can Guardiola claim that someone threw something at him or whatever else. So thankfully there was none of that we know of. And yeah, I can sort of see what you mean in terms of it being, you know, maybe with it being the final game, there was, you know, a begrudging bit of respect from both sides. But
not even begrudging. I think actually two sides say that, yeah, they've been good for each other. And
certainly for the managers, you know.
It's been good for neutrals.
I also think sometimes footballers are stupid. And so Rodri said it after the game, and he asked the Liverpool players to stay the same, and Guardiola said it and Klopp said it, is that they all just went, wow, what a great game that was, exactly, right? Yeah. You know, this is people's profession. You know, they're playing it all the time. And for them to come out and say, you know what, that was actually a really good game, I really enjoyed that. So that tells you, it doesn't really matter that it was the last time Klopp will play Guardiola at Anfield. I also kind of, what helped in that sense is that there's still 10 games to go, so it wasn't a title decider.
Yeah, true.
It didn't quite have the same edge as it might have done if there was 3 games to go, and then the pressure would have been even greater. And I think a draw, they both know, while Arsenal have now gone top, I think they both know those teams gone, but we've just played our hardest game of the season here. Or one of the two hardest games of the season, and we've got through it. And now anything that happens between now and the end of the season is going to be a lot easier than what we just had to put up with.
Let's talk that penalty decision before we can sort of unpack the players. Ghost, in real time when I saw it, I must admit, I wasn't one of the ones screaming for a pen. I thought, oh, it's a bit borderline, and can kind of see why they've not given it. I've watched it so many times since. The more you watch it, the more you think, God, it's totally stonewall.
Yeah, yeah. It is one of those, isn't it, the more you watch it. Where we sit in the press box, McAllister was back to us, so we couldn't actually see how high Doku's boot was. Or
it's the same for the ref, isn't it? The ball. Same for Oliver.
Yeah. But that's why VAR's there. Yeah. I think they just battled it, you know.
Yeah,
I think
they
just thought, it's the 98th minute, there's going to be uproar from the fans down that end if we give this. It's been a great game of football. I should call it a draw and pretend that it's not a penalty. I mean, I hate talking about this, and I think I say it a lot, but we keep coming back to it because the decisions just baffling, aren't they? Some of them. This was another one. You know, when you look at McAllister getting sent off against Brentford for Bournemouth for the high boot, and then you look at Doku yesterday, it's incredible that one is not even a foul and one is a red card.
Someone made a good point I saw on Twitter, saying that basically Curtis Jones played the ball, went over the top, landed studs up, was sent off for that. Doku gets a touch on the ball but launches himself in foot first.
Does he get a touch on the ball?
Well, I just don't think
he does.
The ball doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah. It kind of hits McAllister on the chest, and then if it does it might hit Doku. We haven't seen enough replays. I mean, I'm with you. I didn't think it was a penalty at the time because of the view we had, but then when you saw it, you were like, hang on a minute, that's quite literally a foul anywhere else on the pitch. And I know the whole thing about there's a higher bar and this, that and the other, but you look at Liverpool now. They played Arsenal, should have had a penalty for the handball, which they later admitted. I'm pretty sure they might come out. Well, I'm pretty sure they might. That doesn't make any sense. But I would not. It's pointless. It's gone.
That was the point.
But what it is, in a way, is it makes them accountable, because if the same referee, and I'm not saying Michael does this because he's quite clearly the best referee, if they keep on appearing on this show with their decisions being, and how Webb goes, yeah, that's wrong. So there is a certain sense of accountability. So not too much hate that, but it doesn't make any difference to the scoreline, but it might make a difference in the future, I should say.
Imagine if we hosted our own show, but where we went back on our opinions, Liverpool finished fifth.
And we sort of
you dob your own people. That's why I just think VAR is total farce, because first of all, they have this high bar. They don't want to get involved. You know, they want to let the referees make decisions on the pitch. But then sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And that one yesterday is one for me where they could quite rightly say to the referee, well, you couldn't see that properly, but we could. So go and have another look and make your own mind up, but go and have another look. But sometimes they seem to bottle that. They seem to go, well, you know, we don't want to get involved. It's too late in the game. All these sorts of things. You know, we famously heard Mike Dean say he didn't want to send his mate over.
I mean, that's different.
But that's human nature.
But I think this was just a classic case of, if the referee gives the penalty, VAR doesn't overturn it. But the referee hasn't given the penalty, so VAR doesn't overturn
but
it.
But then what's the point in VAR? That's why.
Because it's a subjective call. It's 50-50.
But why are we... why are we video replaying subjective calls? All it does is lead to what Gorsley's just said, which is Howard Webb having to go on TV and apologise. Otherwise,
that's his opinion as well.
And
this
also,
is one of those ones. This is one of those ones where ultimately, doesn't forget VAR and forget all that stuff. Yeah, it's just, let's pretend VAR doesn't exist.
But you can't.
No, hang on. But let's just pretend VAR doesn't exist. In the old days, the referee looks at that, doesn't give a penalty, then we debate whether or not we thought it was a penalty or not, and it's gone now. Now there's just another layer of another official looks at it and says exactly the same thing. So now there's just two people have said it.
I
know you're then going to get involved in the politics of, do you want to then call over Michael Oliver, the best referee in the country, over to say, look, you might have got this one wrong. I mean, how often does that happen? I don't know. I've not checked. But, and then is the VAR as good as the referee? Is the VAR intimidated by the referee? Is the politics of internally of the referees and the officials themselves?
I think that they tie themselves up in knots with the wording of the laws.
Yeah.
And that's not their fault.
It is, because you can rewrite the...
No, but the referees can't rewrite. Well, I'm not sticking up referees
per se.
But then it's not them, though, is it?
But also, I forgot what I was going to say now. They tie themselves up in the wording of the laws. And there's also this kind of sheen of arrogance from referees, officials, and people who have done that job, where you footballing laymen don't know the rules. You know, this is why this is, and they try and explain it away, and they just end up tying themselves in circles. And then that added thing of, like you were saying about Mike Dean there, when he said he didn't want to send them over to the monitor. They're all out to protect each other.
Well, that's human nature, though, isn't it? Yeah. And I understand that.
It's like a microcosm of politics.
But that's just the same with the team. They're a team on the, not necessarily on the pitch, and they're not against the other two teams, but they are a team.
But what you're doing is by adding...
They turn up at the ground together and leave together.
No, not necessarily those, but like Mike Dean on the telly. Peter Walton's the worst for it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They go to him on BT and was that a sending off? Well, the ref hasn't sent him off, so no, it's not.
But then that's more down to the individual, isn't it? It's like if say I left journalism and then someone threw me what you two have written, I'd say whether it was good or not so good. I don't care.
but what I'm trying to say is I think the video element of it I think adds another layer of confusion, because like you say, they tie themselves in knots with the wording. So there's a high bar. Who decides on the high bar, and where does the high bar sit?
That's subjective, wasn't it?
that's subjective, though, isn't it? So like, there still might be that someone in that VAR studio one week going, no, that doesn't reach the threshold for me to get involved.
Yeah.
The following week, a different person. Whereas if you let the referee just see it, then he can decide, and he's not conferring with anyone, he's just making a decision.
He's not going
it's one person's decision, and there isn't this element of like, hang on, we've all seen the video, how can you not agree with it? And I just think it's making their own lives harder, and I don't understand.
It's common sense.
I'd love to know if the referees are going, yeah, this is great, I'm really glad that someone else could look at that 50 times and make the more debate over my split-second decision, which is really, really hard. There is no such thing as a good standard of refereeing, because it's the hardest thing in the world. But you make it even harder when you ask people to watch videos and then second guess their mates.
Whether you like it or not, Stuart Atwell took a look at that video and went, yeah, I agree, that's not a foul at the end. That's it.
Well, yeah, but I think that I don't think it's as simple as that. I don't think he goes, yeah, I agree, it's not a foul. I think he goes, is that a foul enough for me to get involved? There's a difference between that and it's not a foul, isn't there? Is that a big enough mistake for me to get involved? Something's just a foul or it isn't. Well, it's not, is it? It's them going, do I let the referee's decision on the pitch count, or do I get involved and say, do you want to have another look at that?
But as Ghosty was just saying
that,
then...
So that's not saying it's not foul. Ghosty was
just saying then, it's... Well, why didn't they just treat it as like a safety net and just go, well, come over and have a look? It's the last minute of a massive game.
That's what they should do.
You can very well think that it's not a foul, just come and double check. Please.
Again, and this is the problem. Another problem with it is it's time, isn't it? But you could do that with every pen decision. He could, even though it's the most obvious one in the world, they could go, right, any pen decision, you go and have a little look. He goes and have a little look at that Edison.
He might even glance at it one second and go, absolutely, should we just have a little phone?
But what I'm trying to say...
Or a special glasses, like those Google glasses that the other thing is in.
I just think the whole thing makes it so much more difficult. And you're sick of having VAR debates, but we'll never stop having them because...
Yeah, but if you don't have VAR debates, you'll just have referee
debates. You will.
But I think it's essentially a debate about officiating. It's not about VAR.
Yeah, but it is because we could have this conversation about the referee and his out would always be, well, it happens in a split second. You've all watched it on TV. I haven't. And that's the end of it.
You think some of the things you see at the match and you try to tweet of what it was and you think, I'm not actually sure what happened there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can't imagine how difficult it is for referees, but... That is why VAR is there, but...
And it's a dead easy thing for the referee to even say afterwards, I didn't see it, I didn't catch that, I'm sorry, didn't catch it. Okay, that thing's happening a million miles an hour, you understand, but I think VAR is just... This is the season I think it's just gone completely bonkers, and Liverpool obviously have been hit with three big ones, but you ask any club in the country and they'll say they've been hit with big ones.
The Diaz one for me is out on its own. That's a new level of incompetence. And that should have been a watershed for more than just Liverpool having a bit of a moan and then getting told to cry more or whatever.
But we've all said it. I mean, I've seen tweeted all, you know, last week, the inquest into, you know, Forest's... I know that was fueled by Mark Clattenburg in the mix zone, really, but into Forest's drop ball. But again... This is a lot more stonewall, isn't it? It's more immediate.
Quite a lot of variables would have to happen for Forest to either score or not concede after that drop ball. Yeah. Whereas this is like Liverpool have already scored a penalty
in this game.
And it's the last minute and it would have been the last kick of the game.
Yeah.
They've got a very good chance of winning.
So it's just, I kind of think it's sad that that is the conversation at the end of the game, but it will dominate and it should dominate because VAR has created this situation.
I'd like to just gloss over it, but we have to reflect what fans are talking about, what they want to hear on our podcast and whatever else. So we've got to have a little debate, haven't we? I'm glad we started
by talking about the game, though, because that really is what people have been talking about in the immediate aftermath of it.
I think
people will look at it and go, hang on, is that a penalty?
Yeah, but I think people would want to talk about that and listen to that. So we will move on to the players now. And I don't really know where to start because there's that many great performances. But I'm going to start with two players in one.
Go on.
Erling Haaland and Virgil van Dijk. Because Carragher said something I loved after the game. He said, Virgil van Dijk
is a better defender than Haaland as an attacker.
Yeah. And I thought, we don't stop and appreciate centre-backs sometimes. And we love, I think in this game, we love it. He's finished. And Van Dijk had that, didn't he, a couple of years ago. He's finished. He's finished. Look, he's been beaten. But that to be honest, was a performance like... That's basically the equivalent of Erling Haaland scoring a hat-trick. It was just a supreme performance by a supreme defender.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. And what made it better was the fact that he's got Joe Gomez playing in his third favourite position at left-back. He's got Conor Bradley, who's 20 years old, but played 15 games for Liverpool. And then Jarrell Kwanza, who played his 23rd game for Liverpool yesterday.
All in front of a less familiar goalkeeper.
Yeah, and a backup goalkeeper, and he's just gone, you know what, pull these lads together, let's keep it tight, let's block out the best number 10 in the world, the best number 9 in the world, and Foden and Alvarez, World Cup winner. And he was absolutely brilliant. I've just written a piece about him there, so I've got a few stats lined up. Haaland only had 22 touches, Salah had 23, which is remarkable when you think Salah was only on 25 minutes. And I didn't even think Salah was great. Just just superb. There was a tackle on Phil Foden on the halfway line, which was celebrated like a goal. There was one early on where he just gets a little toe to it as someone's about to pull it back and have a shot.
It was Foden again.
That was Foden again, yeah.
And the incident where Haaland gets on the halfway line and has a bit of a run of it, and that was kind of like, the immovable object and the irresistible force.
The only thing I would say is Haaland's not... I think he wouldn't put that as the biggest thing in his game, would you, running at full flow at someone?
Well, he made Jared Bradford look like an
true,
amateur.
True, good point. Good point.
Van Dijk just shepherded him wide enough for the shot to be comfortable for Keller. And just all round, it was just a real captain's performance. And the only blot on his copybook was he didn't stop for us yesterday, would you believe?
He came
through with Aki and he said, oh, we haven't got time, which... I suppose we can let him off, but...
It's because you threw him under the bus for his future, didn't you?
Well, that's it, yeah. me.
To be fair, he probably saw the ratings, only gave him a 7.
I know, slightly. There were weird ratings, because I can understand why they get certain marks, but...
The reason that he got a 7 is because... In the second half, there were two or three times where he's passing it round the back
he put Kwanzaa under a bit of pressure, and he put Gomez under a bit of pressure, but I think he won all of his aerial duels.
Is he like 4 or 5 games now in a row where he's won them all?
He hasn't lost a duel, I think, since before Christmas. Something like that, or just after Christmas.
Been loads of talk, and I think there's been a reluctance to say he's at the level he was at sort of 4 years ago, but... You know, loads of talk that he's always getting close to it, but I think he is now. I think, you know, was he ever this good? Liverpool won the league.
He didn't have to be. I would like to point out that you can't mention Van Dijk without mentioning Kwanzaa.
I've got him down.
I just wanted to put them all together along with Haaland as well, because it wasn't just Van Dijk that shut down Haaland. Sorry, go on.
Quick one on Van Dijk. I actually think now has to be one of the outstanding candidates for player of the season.
It's weird player of the season, though. It goes in moments, doesn't it? Like last week, it was Phil Foden was going to get player of the season. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I think Phil Foden is an incredible player. Again, watching him in a game like that yesterday, I thought it was very good. But I feel like Van Dijk's body of work for the season is just consistency throughout the season. And unless he suddenly scores the winner in a big game and maybe does one or two things, I just don't think it's as easy for him to... Yeah, true.
The problem you got with Van Dijk and that award is that he got sent off in a big high-profile game at Newcastle, and he had probably his worst game of the season against Arsenal away. That's probably going to count against him in that. But going back to Kwanzaa, it's incredible to think, how old is he, 21 then? Yeah, 21. And he just played like, as he has done since he came into the team, at that Newcastle game, funnily enough.
Yeah.
He just played like he's like, I'm not going to, well, I'm going to say, he's like a mini Van Dijk, as it were. Yeah.
He did a little turn, was that in the first or second half?
He's obviously not quite got the physicality yet, which may never come. But he was physical enough. Did he bounce Haaland off him?
He bounced Haaland.
If he's doing that, and that's more to do with body shape and defending properly than just sheer brute force. Yeah. But he just totally like... He looked like, at the time, everyone thought, oh, Canati's missing, let's put Gomez. No one really considered seriously playing Kwanzaa, even though he's played well up until this point. But for him now, it's like, that's it. It's like we've said this with Bradley already and with Elliot in previous years. And Bobby Clark, I'd argue now, is that these are first-team players now, that's it. That's it. They are now going to be in that squad next season, regardless of who's going to be the new manager coming in. Because they were going to sign a centre back, weren't they? But then they saw him play in the summer. Klopp said, "We can work with this." They weren't expecting it to be quite so early in the season, but that's actually worked in Liverpool's favour because now he is become one of the centre back options. Simple as that.
There's a few things I'd say about Kwanzaa. First of all, I've been kind of hugely impressed with him all season and waiting for them to have that big test. That real, you know, let's see what this kid is really about test. And I thought that was yesterday, and I thought he passed it with flying colours, you know. For them to do that to Haaland, to shut him out in the way that they did, and to weather a storm from Man City early doors, you know, it wasn't easy. And then to play with the coolness that he does, there was a turn, I think, I can't remember if it was the first or the second half, but he's been doing that all season, hasn't he, where he sort of takes the ball so well, he passes it so well, and you don't see him panic too often. You know, he makes the right decisions at the right times. The other thing I'd say is, it's a reminder, and there's another player that we'll talk about in a minute that I'd say the same about. It's a reminder to take the manager seriously when he says, we don't always need to sign someone. I mean, we're always, I was saying that in the summer, banging on, they need a centre half. But, you know, he sees these people in training, don't they? Who's had the better season? Gerald Quanta or Levi Colwill?
I thought you were going to say, you know, yeah, 100%.
I mean, that's not to say Colwill's a bad player.
No, it's not. And it's not to say, I think, if Colwill came to Liverpool, that he would have been a bad signing. But
probably been injured.
No, yeah. But ultimately, I think it underlines, first of all, just how good Klopp is, but also the disrespect, I think, especially every summer and every January that comes around for not just the players in the squad already, but also for the manager in the club, for the decisions that they've made previously and the decisions that they make every year. And when maybe it won't change, but maybe in the summer when everyone's screaming for the next X, Y or Z, they might do well to remember that you can bring three youngsters or sign someone for 16 million and they can do a good job. Ghosty. We'll come on to that other one in a minute.
Very fair, yeah.
Well, that is a segue, isn't it? Do you want to say anything about Quanta before we segue into
the
world's greatest player who ever lived, which is Vitorendo. I just absolutely love the man. I've just found out he's got a video diary and I'm going to learn Japanese. He analyses his own games. So I'm going to have to learn Japanese quickly. Anyone want to teach me?
I don't know how you fit.
I think of all the languages you're going to not learn quickly.
They bring in a defensive midfielder and we expect certain things of them. But the way he passes the ball is brilliant. So Ghosty, do you want to speak? Say it in Japanese if you want. Yeah. Say sorry.
Well, what I'm going to do when we finish this is I'm going to go out, I'm going to make a brew for us all, and I'm going to reach into the work fridge and get out my...
It's like a humble
pie that I've just announced all the way. Yeah. He's been absolutely brilliant.
Are you going to say some sushi then?
Yeah.
No. He's been brilliant, hasn't he? And yeah, when Liverpool signed him, I was unsure because I thought, what's this path Liverpool have gone down? They've been after Romeo Lavia. I forgot all about him. Been after Romeo Lavia for weeks and months, and they're not getting anywhere on that one. No progress, and then they move to Caicedo, and it's 111 million, and that doesn't come off, and then you start to look a bit foolish, both of them going to Chelsea. And then they get a lad from Japan, they get a lad from Germany who saw a little bit of it at the World Cup in Japan, but didn't really, or for Japan, but didn't really notice him. Didn't know too much about him. He's 30, he's coming in at 16 million, and I was really starting to question it. I was thinking, well, what are they playing at? This isn't very like Liverpool, the kind of razor-sharp, studious...
It was what came before. I'm only joking, you know, it's what came before that.
No, but like, you know, if I was thinking it, you can tell loads of others were thinking people who were maybe less sensible than me at times when it comes to transfers and all that type of stuff. So there was question marks over him, and I think he was coming in as a bit of a backup and a deputy, but slowly but surely he's found his footing, and he's been brilliant for at least 3 or 4 months now. Took him time, then getting up to speed. Sometimes thought he wanted a little bit too long on the ball when he got hold of it, not releasing it quick enough on the half turn and stuff like that. But he was always strong in the challenge and always kept Liverpool ticking over in midfield. But you look at him now in these big games, you know, the Carabao Cup final yesterday, he seems to be a big game player, doesn't he? And what an option he's going to be now for the rest of the season and for the rest of his Liverpool contract, really. They've got a real gem on the hands, and I didn't see it coming when he signed in August.
He was an example of a player who learnt during the course of the game, or certainly was able to learn, whether he got the instructions from Klopp or made the decision himself. Because in the first 20 minutes, he was far too high up with his pressing, which is why you saw De Bruyne had quite a few opportunities just to run at the back line. You could tell the crowd were like going,
hang on,
what's going on here? You could hear the murmurs, like, oh, it's happening again. But then he kind of either took a step back or something changed, to the point where we've all seen the clip in the second half where he runs after De Bruyne, dispossesses him. De Bruyne puts his hands up in the air, and a couple of minutes later, De Bruyne gets subbed and is asking, why have I just been subbed? And Endo was part of that. And I mentioned before about Guardiola talking about Endo McAllister, and he was key to that because he's very good at the old progressive passes, as we don't like to say in old school, but that's the phrase these days. Passing the ball forward is what I'd say.
Kevin, you got subbed because you just got Endo, didn't you? And
Is that Kevin De Bruyne or Kevin McAllister?
I just one thing on Endo. I don't know whether he listens to this podcast, so we'll find out. But
I'll ask him.
A mate in the summer, not Endo. Not Endo. I hope he does.
Most of the players do. Yeah, they always listen to this.
But a mate in the summer, I remember when they missed out on Caicedo, saying how gutted he was, and we had a bit of a back and forth because I said, "Don't be gutted about them not signing someone. Be gutted if they don't sign someone. And then he's brilliant and Liverpool are rubbish. You know, this idea in transfers, you know, we've said it before on pods, you don't win the transfer window in the transfer window. You win it a year or 2 years or three years later. When you find out how good those decisions that you made were. And
that's when we found out who's had the last laugh.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? And there's so, it's very interesting, isn't it, around transfers, the way people take them. But I remember saying that to a mate, and if you're listening, I was right, wasn't I? Sorry,
For anybody who's obviously
name him the shame,
because no one can see this. We'd just like to point out that Joe actually got out of his seat, stood over, and shouted that into the.
We're best friends. Don't be upset.
I don't think it. You know, if Liverpool would have signed Caicedo, he would have been brilliant as well.
Yeah, he would have been. I think injured. Someone else that they signed and was brilliant is Alexis McAllister, who again. Gets better each week, and again, reading the national media, I thought Barney Rowley's analysis of him and the way he plays, I thought was really good. He is a strange player. He doesn't have pace, he doesn't have physicality, but he's one of those rare players who just seems to be a little step ahead of everyone else and has such great game intelligence. Both he wax lyrical.
Body in every time he gets the ball, which is what I love about him. There was one there, we talked about that Van Dijk interception, and it comes to McAllister. And he immediately, in his own box, he drags it away and then gets his body in, so he can't really be dispossessed. And every time he gets it, that's how he kind of does it. It's like an old Subutio player where they're on the stick and they can only move like that. And he just gets his body in the way every time. And brilliant passer of the ball, isn't he? And again, it's a strange one because between him and Endo, they were juggling the number six positions, weren't they? And the two very different interpretations of that position. And there were some question marks whether McAllister was naturally suited to it, and you know whether Liverpool might come undone in a big game because he wasn't the ideal characteristic for it. But again, he's another one who's been brilliant for, what, 3, 4, 5 months now. Sort of playing in his preferred number eight position, wasn't he, with Endo in the team now. And you can really see what he brings to the Liverpool team. Just keeps everything neat and tidy, keeps them ticking over, plays that killer pass when it's on. Nunes was a little bit sharper yesterday. He stays on side and McAllister puts him clean through, and he's rapidly becoming one of my favourite Liverpool players. He's just, you know, the passing range that he's got is great to see when he's when the spaces open up, and yeah, you can see why Liverpool moved quickly to get him, really, once they kind of established that release clause. And another triumph for the recruitment department.
Funny enough, Doyle, he's got a few things in common with his namesake, because I think he's a big game player. He's very intelligent. He takes good penalties, scores goals at good times. Not Kevin.
Gary.
Oh, gosh, wondering where on earth.
You're just staring at me.
I was
like,
where on earth?
You know,
what on earth are talking about?
I thought it was like a mess.
Yeah, I know exactly. I was thinking, I don't remember this happening Home Alone.
Well, to be fair, Kevin makes the right decisions at the right times. He puts the little toy cars in the right places, doesn't he? And
foils the plans.
Yeah. Are we now
and perfectly places those paint pots, doesn't he?
Now, are we talking about Home Alone or his actual brother? Come on. McAllister, it's quite funny actually, because when he was playing number six, he made all the right noises of like, yeah, I'll play wherever. But the minute he's gone away from that position, he's like, it's almost like, thank God for that. You know, I think you can tell that he's proper reveling in it. Also, he did have gloves on yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of these players that's just, the fact that he wears gloves, it makes him look better. And the reason that, no, I know that sounds stupid.
This is the analysis.
Yeah, the analysis you wanted. Yeah. The reason is because it accentuates the movements that Gorsi's just mentioned with his body shape and stuff like that. So you just notice him. What he looks like, he's just kind of gliding. Funny enough, I was in the process of writing this into our blog, and Man City scored, when I was saying, I love watching Phil Foden because he kind of glides around the pitch. Yeah. The ball looks as though it's stuck to his foot.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with McAllister. Yeah. The way that he's able just to, you mentioned, the range of passes, and he's clearly can take a penalty, which hasn't always been the case this season for Liverpool. He scored, obviously, one on Thursday in Prague. Yeah. And I just think overall, having seen him, I mentioned this loads of times, saw him play in the summer, was expecting to be brilliant, obviously wasn't able to play in that position, and now we're finally seeing what he can actually do.
Dead quick one, would you have him on pens ahead of Salah? No.
Yes. Makes a lot to me, how many Salah scores.
Yeah.
Makes three of us. Funny enough, I think McAllister would have been brilliant for Man City. I think if you're Man City...
Oh, he's a proper Man City
fan. Well, yeah. There was talk that they looked at him, actually, because they obviously they wanted Paqueta, didn't they, and that didn't come off, and then they ended up getting Matheus Nunes.
And Chelsea wanted him because he's played for Brighton.
Yeah. He's a player.
Yeah.
Couple more. He's a player.
And he's still playing, yeah.
A couple more before we finish off. I want to talk about Darwin Nunes because, you know, like you say, the... couple of times yesterday, well, more than a couple of times, quite a few times yesterday, he's offside.
For hiding the first half.
Yeah, I mean, he plays on the edge, doesn't he, quite literally. But I wouldn't change him because I just think, ultimately, where is he when that back pass goes through? He's in right in the exact place and goes running and makes it happen. And that's what I love about it. And the one thing I would say yesterday, I wasn't that impressed with the substitution of Nunes because I thought he was one of the players for Liverpool that Man City was scared stiff off.
He was starting to tire, wasn't he?
He was.
But ultimately, you know, he's not going to play when Thursday night, is he? So he's got a week off there. So just play him. Play Gakpo on Thursday. And
the three of us will be up from Thursday night.
Yeah, he does. He does play on that edge, doesn't he? Like you say, he was offside five times. But you can almost forgive that because maybe the sixth time he's onside and he's clean through.
That's what I mean.
And ultimately, you have to take the rough with the smooth with Darwin Nunes. He's not the most polished player in world football, and you know, warts and all, he's having a fantastic season. He's always Liverpool's maybe not most, what's the, you know, Salah glides across the pitch.
Elegant.
He has with his movements and his dribbles. Sometimes Nunes is just a battering ram, isn't he? But he's always threatening, no matter if he's having a good game or a bad game.
It must be horrific to play against, wasn't it? You're a defender.
I think yesterday, I don't like to labour the point too much between him and Haaland because I think it's unfair on Nunes, but I don't think either of them played particularly well, but both of them showed what they're like when they don't play good games. Like Haaland barely had a kick. Nunes was still massively involved in everything and trying to make things happen, and he did make with the penalty, Edison kicked him into the cock, didn't he, really? So, not his best performance. I thought he might have been able to really stepped up after those two goals on Thursday night, but you just can't keep him out of the subplots of any game, can you? Whether he's good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, but part of the reason why he got subbed as well because he has had the hamstring injury, which Andy Robertson kindly told us all he had a hamstring injury after the game on Thursday. I know you're going to mention the sub. I have mentioned the sub. I think it was hard for Gakpo because he was coming into that game at a very critical point.
And has it changed?
And the other substitutions were put in when Liverpool were kind of on top, whereas I think for Gakpo it was a bit more difficult. And I hadn't noticed he's had a lovely haircut as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, quite sharp.
One thing I would say for Nunes, obviously the frustration of the offsides, the one offside I think he couldn't have been onside for was the goal for Diaz, because if you actually watch that, he makes a run and I can't remember who gets the ball initially, but they don't play a pass, they go wide and then it comes back to him. And it basically just didn't have enough time to get back onside. So I think, you know, that would probably underline a bit of frustration is that if he'd have been onside there.
Yeah. And that was an example as well of Liverpool passing their way through City, which is what they were able to do a bit more second half.
And then I want to talk about Luis Diaz because, again, missed a couple of big chances. And if my dad's listening, my dad gets really frustrated with Luis Diaz because he's like, oh, he's so wasteful. But at the same time, the desire of that lad and the sheer running and the way he pins teams back. Again, Liverpool wouldn't be Liverpool if they didn't have players like that who are just willing to go again and go again and go again. And he looked a bit distraught at the end of the game, but he should be really proud of, I think, a really good performance.
Well, he plays every game, doesn't he? A big game anyway. So that shows you what Klopp thinks of him. I mean, the best bit was where he went down the wing, got the ball inside his own half, didn't he? He had Rodri and Walker up against him and he left Rodri on his backside, which is quite rare. I mean, I'm surprised the tremors didn't, you know, we didn't feel them on the other Richter scale. And then he does Walker, and then I read some with the same. Walker did really well to get back and defend the cross. It's like it hit him in the face. He didn't know anything about it. But yeah, the misses. I mean, there was only really one bad miss, wasn't there?
The one
where he was clean through. Yeah. And then from that one, then he takes the extra touch the next chance. Then I think there was another one where he could have done something and just didn't. I think he got somebody got in ahead of him, did they? I can't remember.
The one he goes through.
I watched that replay so many times, and he does everything right, and so you're still expecting it to go in, and it doesn't.
And also, it's very, very fast, isn't it? Yeah. The way he's moving with the ball, he doesn't get a chance to slow himself and pick
but
a spot.
His body shape looks all right, and then he chooses the right option for the finish as well. He just doesn't curl it in enough. Yeah.
I actually think there was maybe a bit of thing in the back of his head there that Walker's the one chasing him, and we know Walker's got that recovery pace, hasn't he? And maybe that's coming to his head. But certainly Kyle Walker would have gone home on Sunday night thinking he hasn't been given a test like that all season, the way Diaz did. I thought he was excellent. Finishing aside, thought even in the first half, and again, it kind of wriggles free of a couple of challenges and does everything right, but then wraps his foot around it too much and curls it wide. So you're being uber critical, really, but I suppose these are the fine margins that everyone talks about, aren't they? The one when he goes clean through from Salah's pass should have done better, really. But other than that, I thought he was excellent. Works so hard, and that's one of the reasons Klopp loves him. You know, it's not just him on the ball, dribbling past men, going inside and outside and all that. It's him getting back and helping out, whether it's Robertson or Gomez or whoever. And he was a proper outlet, wasn't he, in the second half? Liverpool was just getting the ball to him, and he could go at it, you know, whether it was Walker or Stones or Rodri or whoever it was. I thought he was excellent, just perhaps could have won it for Liverpool, which maybe would have been a bit too critical.
Yeah, he's always not. Let's finish off really quickly. Go on,
sorry. We've got the game, haven't we, on Thursday?
I don't think that people are listening with that much of an interest of what our team
it'll be interesting to see.
Well, I mean, I wish we could ask people live, but quick talk about the destination of the title now in the final 10 games now. 10 games.
10 games to go.
Obviously, the next one after the FA Cup and international breaks is Arsenal-Man City, which could have a huge bearing. Liverpool play Brighton on the same day, don't they? So, I mean, either of you want to answer this one? Are you feeling confident? Are you feeling...
Yeah, I mean... How do you feel after that one? I think this game against Brighton now is... I mean, they're all must-wins, but this is a huge... Absolutely have to win. You know, Liverpool don't win that. It just feels like all this momentum is just brought to a massive halt. Do you win that one? Am I right in saying that that's the 2 o'clock game and City Arsenal are for? Yeah. So they'll be able to sit back and watch what happens in that one. And if it's a draw, Liverpool find themselves in the exact place that they were in before the weekend started, which would be brilliant because they're just that further along towards the title.
What do you want to happen in that one? Because I thought, again, Carragher on Sky yesterday was saying Liverpool will want Arsenal to win.
I almost feel like...
I've wanted Man City to win, but I feel a draw,
like,
maybe.
If Arsenal win, you can start to maybe think City are one slip up away from being out of it totally now.
See, I'm the opposite. I kind of think... I sort of think with Arsenal, I want one contender to fall, and I think they're most likely Arsenal over City. And if they get beat, it's a huge test for them, isn't it? And if they can get out the Etihad with something,
if you're Arsenal,
you're thinking, actually, we can win this. You know, we couldn't do those big games last season, but we did do this year, especially they won the home games against both Liverpool and City. So I just kind of feel like a win for City puts Arsenal back into the sort of like third place, and maybe that's where you belong type category. But a draw probably scored.
Not necessarily about that game, but you've just reminded me there. I actually didn't think Liverpool could have won the league until yesterday. And I know they obviously didn't win, but it's kind of strengthened my, or given me a belief now that maybe they actually can because of how dominant they were against City. And maybe this for the first time, it's, you know, they can win this.
It's the first time I've started thinking, you know, you look at the away games that they got, Goodison and Old Trafford, no matter what you think of those two teams as teams right now, and, you know, watch them on Saturday and they're both not very good is the kind way of putting it, but they're always tough places to go. You know, even when Liverpool have been their absolute best, they've always been tough places to go. You know, they drew, in the year they won the league, they drew in both places, am I right in saying, or did they beat Everton?
They drew them both as well.
So they, even when they played very, very well, they've not won there at times. So they're both up. But I think if Liverpool play the way we know that they can play, and again, that's easier said than done, but I think what they demonstrated against Man City is they can dominate the best team. So they can dominate those types of teams because they're not very good.
Tottenham at home is going to be a big one for that.
The thing is, you mentioned their momentum. I just don't think any of this counts anymore. They don't play for another 3 weeks in the league. And when they come back after international break, it's essentially 10 games to the end of the season. It's a mini season. It's 10 games. They're all right next to they're all right next to each other, and there's only that one game first off. So it's almost like get that game out of the way, Man City v Arsenal, and then suddenly it's like, okay, now they're all just doing their own separate things, just going for it.
And that's why I think Arsenal will be devastated because of the momentum that's been building, and then their first game back from the international break is City.
But that's why I think an Arsenal defeat would be would almost be quite good, because, like you say, their momentum's killed, and then they go to the place where they can really take confidence and go, you know what, we can win this, or they can go, you know what, we're not quite good, because they've got to overhaul Liverpool and Man City. So I don't know. I mean, it's tough, isn't it? But
I suppose
none of us have answered the question. What's going to happen?
I mean, I think City will win because of City.
The rest of the season. For the rest of the season, who's going to win it?
Who's going to win
second,
title?
Third? Yeah, I thought that was the question, wasn't it? I
suppose it was. I'm sort of not brave enough to ask it, but go on, Doyle. You are famously finished fifth, Liverpool. So,
well, they won't finish fifth, but they will finish third. City will win it, and Arsenal second.
I'm sure we'll get lots of nice tweets about that.
Yeah, I'm going to be the antithesis to that. This is the first time that I think Liverpool actually can win the league now. So yeah, why not?
But okay, what I will say then, if City or Arsenal do not win the league, then it's a massive missed opportunity for them. Whereas if Liverpool don't win the league, I don't regard that as being a missed opportunity.
I agree with that, and I think Liverpool deserve far more credit than either Arsenal or City this season because of what they've had to go through to get to where they are. But
I mean, Arsenal have just been crying it in for weeks and weeks. And it was interesting that they had the first time in ages they had a really close game.
Be careful, I have to go another podcast and apologise.
Well, maybe I want to be on it. No. But it's interesting, that was the first time they had a close game in a long time and they did struggle through it.
I think Liverpool have had close games and struggled through them recently, haven't they? I think when you're 10 games to go and you put yourself in with a massive opportunity, if you're Liverpool, you don't want to waste it. I'm going to go with you, Gorsi. I think sometimes you've got to get that glass and look at it and be half full. And I'm going to say Liverpool, Man City and then Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, really, in terms of, you know, it won't be viewed as a missed opportunity for Liverpool if they don't win the league. But with it being here in front of them now with 10 games to go...
Does that mean they've got less pressure, by the way? Because I think they do. Liverpool. I think Liverpool have got less pressure than the other two teams.
I think so. And especially because the next game is between those other two teams. So whoever wins that...
I just think there is less pressure on Liverpool. I don't think they'll be feeling any pressure at all. They've already got a trophy.
You always feel a bit of pressure, don't you?
But they haven't got a manager who exudes feeling pressure. You know, he sees this as opportunity more than something to be concerned about.
Although weirdly, Guardiola does sometimes have that kind of pressury look, and then they're the one team that you think shouldn't really, when you think about it. Whereas at Arteta, I'm not sure. I think Arsenal will have learned from last season. I don't think they'll be falling away. I just think it'll be the three of them will just be going at it for the next four games. Because then when you get down to the last six, and then the thing about Arsenal, talk about their tough games. Their tough games are right at the end of the season, I think. The Tottenham United, the two away games. And I think what those two teams will be fighting for will be different compared to what they'd be fighting for a little bit earlier when... I think, have City got to play Tottenham away?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah. So I think they'll be in different places by then. So that might work in Arsenal's favour.
I actually think City's running now is probably the best running of the lot. You know, they play at home to Arsenal and they go away to Tottenham, but a lot of their games look fairly straightforward. So it's difficult, but... Our glasses of Carabao are always half full, aren't they, Gorsi?
Yeah.
Do you have a glass? Would you pour your Carabao into a glass?
Why shouldn't you drink your Carabao from a glass? You know, you can drink it. Drink your Carabao however you like
it. Would you drink it out of your blood red mug?
I would do. If Carabao want to provide, imagine if in the office we had Carabao on tap.
What about out of the actual Carabao cup?
If someone makes my dream, that's the when I go to bed every night.
And have it on my Weetabix.
I dream about sitting with Emil one side, with Toro the other, and we're all having a drink of the Carabao cup. And that,
what about a Brian Potter style vase? That's a very contemporary reference there from a comedy from 22 years ago.
Right. Well, I think that we're not going to pick our teams for Sparta.
Can we make a prediction? Anyway?
You can predict. Ian Doyle wants to pick his team for Sparta. So before we go.
It'll be. I don't even know. I didn't even prepare for this.
Would you like to make a prediction for Sparta?
Yeah, it'd be 0-0.
Kelleher, Bradley, Simakas, Kwanzaa,
Gomez?
Nalo.
No, it'd be Gomez.
Gomez, yeah.
I think midfield, Bobby Clark plays, McConnell plays, and then... Yeah, Elliot or Szoboszlai at 45.
He's going to be absolutely knackered, isn't he?
Gakpo.
Oh, by the way, we haven't talked about Elliot, so very, very quickly.
Yeah, I said he was probably...
Brilliant. He was brilliant.
Yeah, he was very much.
The one who protects the ball really well. Yeah.
I mean, in the first half, he was the one that was taking the fight to City in an attacking sense, and he was very good. Sets up that chance for Szoboszlai.
Yeah, and it probably says a lot about the type of performances he's putting in that we haven't really talked about him. And
played in two positions as well.
Consistency, the positions, yeah, very, very good.
He had a really good season, to be fair.
Yeah, he's been excellent.
And his surname's got two T's.
His surname's got two T's and he's really...
Slavy making when we come out of here.
You haven't finished picking your team, so pick your front three.
Gakpo, me and you.
Gakpo, me and you, yeah. Dan's, Gorsi on the bench.
Dan's could be, yeah. Dan's if he's got over his concussion.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go. Prediction 0-0. There you go. So we'll be back on Friday to probably discuss Sparta a little bit.
It's Friday, isn't it? It is Friday, isn't it? Yeah. But it needs to be, because
last eight.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back on Friday to talk them. Huge game in the FA Cup against Manchester United. So that they do carry on taking fast, these big games, don't they? So thanks for listening. We'll be back on video on Friday. Please, if you're listening via Apple Podcasts or something like that, give us a like, give us some stars.
You can press the bells.
You can't press the bell on Apple Podcasts, no. but let us know. Let us know what you think. Any feedback is massively appreciated. We appreciate your company, and we'll see you on Friday. Ta-ra.